Hey everyone, this is Tom McCaffrey. You're listening to the Last Exit to Brooklyn podcast on Storic Media Podcast Network. Thanks a lot. You're a winner. You can do it. Hey everyone, welcome to the Last Exit to Brooklyn. How are you?
We have a big show tonight.
Yeah, we have a lot of guests. Me. Yeah, it's just me and Eric today. So, 4th of July weekend just ended. What did you do for 4th of July?
I stayed in the city.
And, how was it?
I got screwed because I thought there was going to be a big fireworks display above the Empire State Building, and there really wasn't.
There was nothing?
No, they weren't telling anybody where the fireworks were, but apparently they were just kind of in the regular places, but they didn't want everyone to bunch up.
I just got back to New York City like 5 days ago, mm-hmm. So I heard fireworks like the first couple nights I was here.
Yeah, there's been fireworks basically every night.
Yeah. Yeah, why do they do that?
I don't know. They said that they were like doing it for 2 weeks or something like that, just fireworks every night in different locations. But you're not expecting it. So I don't know how great fireworks is if you're not expecting it. It just scares you.
Yeah, one night it was really close to me. So did you do anything? Did you go out or anything? You said the city was weird. Why? Because no one was here?
Yeah, it was pretty empty in the city, kind of a sign. Because usually during the day in the city on 4th of July, it's full and then empty. And then at the night, everyone comes in.
And no one was out on the night of it?
I mean, there were some, but it was
Did you do anything? Or
I tried to look at the fireworks. And there were.
Yeah, I was at the Jersey Shore, like Point Pleasant. That was pretty fun.
Oh, that's cool. Did they have fireworks?
They did, like not like official. I think people just were like setting them off where they just from where they are.
Yeah, it's been a lot of that going on lately.
Yeah, it's like everyone, you know, it's really nice there.
Point Pleasant, yeah.
Everyone, you know, I've been there before. Everyone like shits on New Jersey so hard. I mean, you know, I don't know. It reminded me of the Hamptons.
Yes, Jersey. I mean, I think it was that show years ago gave it such a bad rap.
Yeah.
And it was like that for a long time. But you go to a lot of Jersey beaches now. They're nice, you know?
They're nice beaches. I guess I went to this one area where, like, people hang out and they're kind of dirtbaggy. But I don't know. I remember when I was in the Hamptons, you know, when I was younger, there were definitely areas that had a lot of dirtbags.
Yeah, it was, you know what it was? It was like the further west you go out, the lower it gets.
Yeah, the better. You mean in the Hamptons?
No, the worse it gets. Really, like the dirt.
Oh yeah, like West Hampton and Hampton mm-hmm. Bays.
Quag. Do you ever go to Quag?
Yeah, Quag was okay. That was like less. I mean, I think there was some of that, but the worst was Hampton Bays. That was definitely known as like the armpit of the Hamptons. But still, it's like you're in the Hamptons. I don't know. I never understood all that. I mean, you can stay away from the dirtbag part of it by just not going to like clubs and bars.
Yeah. But I think the problem is that they make some of those towns like that's the only thing you can do at night. But if you don't, you know, you don't have to go to a club.
Yeah. So, yeah, it was fun. And then we were going to talk about, but you know, this whole thing, like kind of what we've been watching, you know, being cooped up. Cause it's still like in New York, you can go outside, but you can't do anything. Like you can like buy coffee and then leave. So
that's what you can do that.
Yeah. But still it's like weird. It's not like everyone's like, oh yeah, it's opening up. But I mean, not really. It's not like I can go sit somewhere. You have to like go and leave.
Well, you can sit outdoors now. That's the thing.
Yeah. It just looks, I don't know. I don't like, I never liked sitting outdoors in New York City and at restaurants. Just looks like they're trying to not be closed, but it still is. Yeah, well, so I'm still watching a lot of like shitty things or old. You know, I'm kind of revisiting a lot of older things.
Like movies, you mean?
Yeah, like movies. Like I watched. Well, all right. So, did you want to talk? So, King of Staten Island. That's sort of recent, right?
Yeah, it's very. They're not releasing any movies anymore. So, like,
yeah.
Like
so that's one of the more recent ones. Yeah. And did you see it right when it came out?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
I thought it would be good just because, like if it's Apatow, I mean, pretty much, it's even if it's not that good, it's still going to be pretty good. You know what I mean? Trying to figure out I wonder why. Why are his movies better? Is it because, is it just like all the pop culture references and stuff, or?
I think he puts a lot of care into the movies. You can tell that he's always. He's working hard on everything. He's not phoning it in. Because I think you can do that easily with a comedy. You know, just say, hey, this is funny. We'll throw it in. But I think he tries to go a little extra mile.
Wonder, yeah, but it's like a lot of, like, there's always, like, pop culture references that are funny. You know what I mean? He's, like, the king of that. I didn't really know what to. What did you think of, like, Pete Davidson in it?
He was good in it, I thought. You know, he can act. You know, I was kind of shocked a little bit, but you know.
Yeah, he's good at just kind of doing. I can't really put my finger on what I think. He's just one of those guys who just kind of has like a thing, you know. Because I feel like people still kind of like shit on him and are like, oh, he's not even that funny, or you know, he doesn't really even do anything, but. I don't know. He has that thing, though, that, like, you can't really, like, learn. You know what I mean? You can learn to act pretty well, especially in a movie. But you can't you can't be taught kind of the thing he has. I guess that's part of what it is that you can't really figure it out. I think like, Jack Nicholson has that.
Yeah. I mean, you think he's, like, what made him a star on Saturday Night Live right from the beginning, even before he did much, was I think he was just likable. People like him.
Yeah, he's likable.
They root for him too, you know.
He does have like some star thing too.
Yeah,
because I like him. Like I think, and I when he first started us, and you know he was around, you know, the stand up scene for a little while. Did you kind of know him? Like, I did shows with him, but I never really knew him.
Yeah, I talked to him a little bit. I did some shows with him. You know, he was a standout especially when you found out how old he was.
Because he started when he was like, he was around when he was like 17, 18.
I mean, he said in some interview that he started when he was 16, but I kind of remember, I don't know, I thought he was doing it before. I wasn't sure of it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I just remember hearing about him like a lot because people were like, oh, there's this kid and he's like so young and he's great. And of course, you know, I was like, whatever. You know, I just got mad.
I think sometimes the people embellish because I swear when I first was doing shows that he was on, they're like, oh, this kid's like 12. I'm like, what? And I'm like, oh my God, he's a genius. But, you know, it's like he was 16 maybe and everyone was like, yeah, he's 12, you know, whatever.
Yeah, and he kind of had a very like street kind of thing. You know, I mean, he was almost like hip hoppy. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
But then like,
and he wasn't scared up there at all.
Yeah, he had a like swagger, and I remember seeing pictures of him. And he was like giving the finger, and he was like really into hip, and he looked like hip hop ish. Like he had that, and I was always like, oh, this must be some kind of like New York-y, like cocky kid. And then when he was on SNL, he seemed like almost nerdy, you know what I mean? Yeah. So I was kind of like, wait a minute. I always thought he was kind of this like cocky asshole guy, but he came off very not like that. So he has that like self-deprecating. He has that thing where he's really confident, but he also looks very like he doesn't have confidence, you know what I mean? I think that's why he's endearing to people.
Right, exactly. Yeah, because if he just came up kind of like an obnoxious, overconfident asshole, I don't think it would have worked for him.
Yeah, and everyone just seems to love him. I mean, like, and I get it. Yeah, I get it. He's someone, you know, people look at someone and they're like, I don't get it. I don't get it. You know, when someone goes, he's someone like from day one, I was like, oh, I get it.
And that movie, like, I don't know what the numbers are of that movie because they don't release the video on demand numbers. But I think it was so much better that that movie
came out that way.
Yeah, because I think, I mean, it might have done well before, but it would have been definitely had a lot of competition with, you yeah. know, seven comic book movies, you know, superhero movies.
Yeah, because all those other movies were coming out, right? So,
yeah.
And that's a big thing in the last few years. Comedies have sort of like dropped off in the movie theater. Yeah, so this seems like the way, and also like, you know, Ricky Velez is a lot of comedians that we like kind that we know.
Yeah, Mike Vecchione was really good in it.
Mike Vecchione, which we both know, who's really I've known. I mean, yeah, we've both known him for years. He's a really cool guy. He's really funny. And Ricky, like, you know, is. Has a huge part in it.
Yeah, and he was really good in it. I mean, you know, it's good to see comics can act, you know, because
yeah, Ricky was really good in it. I gotta say, I was like very impressed with him in it.
Bill Burr, I thought was good too, acting wise.
Bill Burr was really good. I didn't really know what to expect of it. I, you know, I thought it would be good. I watched it. One thing I will say is it's a little different watching a movie. It's like highly anticipated like that just at home alone because you're mm-hmm. kind of like, it makes you a little like, is this good? Or like, I don't know. Like now yeah. you have to just kind of form your own opinions on things. You know what I mean? It just shows you how much like a crowd can influence what you think of a movie because... I was like, yeah, I guess this is good. I mean, it's good, but I don't know. No one's here laughing with me. So.
Yeah, with comedies, you need that more, you know?
Yeah, so...
But I also think, you know, because Apatow movies are always kind of long, and this one was kind of long, too, but it actually works better in this format. Like, I kind of feel like now, like, they should just have all the comedies now, like, on video on demand, you know? Because yeah. comedies, they usually like to make them short, but you don't have to, really, in this format, I don't think, you know?
Yeah, and obviously with COVID, everything's changing with entertainment. And I finally, like, I don't know that I'm like the only one that's had this revelation. I'm sure I haven't. But like with this whole COVID thing, I feel like I don't think movies will be done forever. But I do think it's been moving in this direction for so long. It like movies aren't as good anymore. And binge watching long shows is like the new thing because... Yeah. Like Game of Thrones was like a 70-hour movie that you could just watch through, you know what I mean, over time.
Right.
Instead of just like a 2.5-hour movie that you were like, oh yeah, they just kind of jam-packed that. Like in the past, I guess with the Game of Thrones thing, I mean, I know that wasn't, it started as a show to begin with, but if they made that into a movie, they would have had to make like 5 movies, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, so...
You know, and if you look at like how they when they make these series, let's say they do a season, right? And they do 10 episodes, and each episode's an hour, right? So it's 10 hours. So that's like, yeah, that's like 4 or 5 movies. That's not really like, and they're filming it all at once. So it's not a crazy amount of content when you break it down, I think.
And then it's better because they don't have to, with movies, if they're going to keep continuing the story, they make like, they'd have to make like 4 or 5 sequels, you know, like
yeah.
they, you know, it would, that was usually bad if they kept making a comedy sequel, like they kept making like Police Academy sequels, you know, and they were just awful. But if you had a show where you just had like 3 seasons of the show, like say like a Police Academy story, you could just continue the story. You wouldn't have to like keep coming up with these 1.5 hour arcs.
Right,
I just
right.
feel it's weird. It's like the template doesn't work as well anymore of like, yeah, here's a movie. Here's the first act, second act, third act, and it's over and that's it. Yeah. Oh, you liked it? I will make another one. It's exactly the same. But like I've been watching Shameless over and over. Like I've been watching Shameless. Show. Yeah, and that's like a comedy and it's good cuz it keeps going, but you're never like, oh, what they're like that couldn't have been a movie, you know what I mean? So movies are just sort of like, I don't know, like maybe I'm just older and but they're seeming less relevant now, you know what I mean?
I think the only issue with like, and I like Shameless, but like a lot of these shows when they go on for a long time, they always try to top themselves. Like when if you watch Shameless, you're like, you'll watch an episode and you're like, that's the craziest thing I ever saw. And then they'll just try to top it. And then after a while, yeah. It gets to be too much, I think.
Yeah, and it gets, it does, even with shows, like, they're yeah. good. They get redundant. They keep the same thing. I binge watch Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And that's good for three. That's really good for three seasons. And then you can just tell they don't know what to do. You can just tell they're like, all right. And they, did you watch that?
Yeah. I think it's funny, but almost every episode is like, oh my God, the company's going to not make it. And then at the last minute, so, I think we did this once before. It's like, Entourage.
It is. It's like, well, they're always like, oh no, we should have taken the $3 million. Oh, now it's obsolete. Whoa, this other guy wants to be $10 million. Oh my God, it's great now, you know. And then the next step, and you could tell they just didn't really know what to. And I felt like it became less about the comedy, it became more about like that the plot of it was right. Like. And I will say, when T.J. Miller left, I think that hurt it a lot.
Yeah, but you know what the one thing is, like, why I appreciate the Sopranos, because every once in a while the Sopranos would have an episode where not a lot happened, you know. And I remember at the time, people were like, oh, that episode's boring. But you know what? Sometimes you got to pull back a little bit and have a relax. Because that's why, like a show like Shameless or even Silicon Valley. Like Shameless, the one thing, I like Shameless, is like, it's like so upsetting every week almost. Like there's like how much drama is in this fucking family? Like every week.
Yeah.
You know, and even Silicon Valley, it's like every week the company is going to, I mean, so sometimes you need these episodes where not a lot happens, like bridge episodes, you know?
Yeah. I like Shameless because it's kind of like it's focusing on a sect of the population that most people have no awareness of.
Would you ever see
even exists?
Do you ever see the English version?
No, but I mean, is it good?
It's saw
probably better, right?
No, I mean, I saw an episode. They did something very smart with Shameless because it was about like white trash people in England, right? So when they made the American version, the most obvious choice would be like having like rednecks from the South.
Yeah.
But they didn't. They're like, we'll do white trash in Chicago because no one really knew that that was a thing.
Yeah. And I really like that it's white trash, but it's very indicative of, it's like, it kind of does it slyly where it's a commentary of like how America is very unbalanced and unfair. Right.
And like they're not really like white trash, they're just poor, you know?
Yeah, they're just, because they're all like really, like most, they're all like really smart.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like they're white trash put in, they're kind of like these smart people given absolutely no opportunity. And so it's actually like a perfect, I've thought about this because America loves to celebrate people who come from something like that and make it really huge. And then we're like, wow, they're so great. They came from nothing. But when those people are just, haven't made anything of themselves yet, everyone's like, oh, get out of here, you losers. So it's kind of an interesting where you're watching these people given nothing trying really hard to get somewhere, and a lot of them actually are getting somewhere. So you're kind of watching the American dream happen. So
yeah, but you also see how hard it is and how, like, when you're poor you don't have any room for error, you know, basically. It's and there's a lot of poor people that don't get anywhere, and even they show that on the show where things don't happen for them sometimes.
Yeah, and I love how like it shows how their environment has what it's kind of turned the kind of person they are, because there's episodes where like some of them will go to jail and they almost like
a lot of
go
episodes
to jail.
Right.
But like there's one where like the guy like is going to go to juvie and he's like, "Yeah, I want to go to juvie." Like, he's not scared of going, he's a small white kid, and he's like, I mean, it's going to help me. And then one kid is in jail, and they're, like, trying to get him out, and he's, like, doing great in jail, and he's like, no, I don't want to leave jail. So it's kind of an odd, you know, like, I don't know, not normal people who weren't, I don't know, you just, it makes me, watching that makes me feel like a total wuss, and how, like, I wouldn't be able to handle things that they're given, you know. And I know it's not, you know, based in reality, I mean, you know, it's obviously like fake, but still, like, it's I like that because it's not like, you know, Entourage is the opposite. Entourage is kind of like the show starts with them on third base, and
right,
then, like,
and they're getting so upset because they don't get a movie, you know.
Yeah, it's like they get like, so it's, and so like I've been rewatching Entourage too. That's how bored I am. And that, I don't know if you liked that show. I mean, I feel like everyone kind of was like, yeah, that show's fine.
Yeah, I mean, again, with that show, it's like critics loved it at the beginning, and then everyone realized it was kind of a bro show, and then everyone started making fun of it.
Yeah, it's, I've been rewatching some, certain seasons are better than others. But I don't know. And then so another thing I just was watching last night was Speed with Keanu Reeves. Have you seen that recently? Do you remember when that came? I mean, I'm sure you remember when it came out. It
was huge. Yeah.
Did you like it when it came out?
Yeah. I mean, it was kind of Keanu Reeves' big movie. I mean, he had been in stuff before, but that made him like a leading man, kind of sex symbol.
And I got to say, that time, like early to mid 90s, everyone was always shitting on Keanu Reeves for being terrible, me included. but I rewatch him now, and I really like, he's another one. I'm like, oh, he like has the, like Speed. He like, that could easily have been a terrible movie. And even though he's kind of like the Bill and Ted guy, and he sounds like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's believable in that movie as kind of like a bad, I was watching, he's a really good hero guy.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? Like he's really likable, and you can tell he's very like, he wants to like save the people. And I also kind of like that he's not like the really like masculine, huge buff guy. He's just kind of like an everyman-ish guy, but he's still kind of like a bad. He was like the kind of guy you'd watch and be like, you know, that's what I'd be like in that situation.
Yeah, and he had that haircut in the 90s, the one that George Clooney had that was like a Caesar haircut that was so popular.
He did the buzz cut. And you know what? I actually was thinking about that last night while I was watching it. I guarantee that was like a conscious decision because he's supposed to be like, he's kind of like a tough cop. I don't think he's in the FBI, but like the buzz cut makes him seem more like alpha, like a cop guy.
Right.
And if he had just had his hair, how he usually had it, it would have just been like, oh God, like,
And he's had like, I mean, he's really had like nine lives, Keanu Reeves. I mean, he's big again.
I know. He's those Wick movies. And then, you know, I rewatched Point Break like a week ago. That's like one of my favorite. I love that movie.
I hate that movie.
You do? Why?
I think it's so stupid. Good.
That's kind of what I like about it.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? It's just because it's such a dumb plot?
Yeah. And when they go 100% pure adrenaline and they high five, I really hate that part. No, most people love that movie. I just hate that movie. I don't know why. I think it's, maybe I should watch it again. I just think it's so cheesy.
Yeah, it is, but it's, I think it was like, I think what it was when it came out, they were acting like it was a really serious, like good movie, but now it's like, it is cheesy and like, and, but he's good in it again. Like he comes off good. Well in it. Even though he's still like, the Bill, and he sounds like the Bill. I guess his voice was his problem, always his problem, right? Well, like, 'cause he always sounds like. So I don't know. I guess the point is, I just like am like, for so long, I remember people shit on Keanu Reeves, and then I'm looking back and I'm like, oh, I kind of get it now, like why he was this big. You know? I think he was another one of those guys you didn't really know what it was about him. That people seem to like. But
didn't he have sex with someone famous to get that part or something? Wasn't that the whole rumor?
Well, you know, the whole thing, there was a rumor that, and especially at that time in the mid-90s, that he was gay.
Yeah.
And that he was in a relationship with David Geffen.
Right, that's it.
That was like, and when I was in Hollywood at times, like I would meet people in the industry, and I remember I met this like casting director who was like, I think she was like kind of a big casting director, and she was like, oh yeah, like it's known that they're like a couple. So I don't know how truth, but I mean, I don't know. Like, I feel like you would have heard more about that. I heard that from years ago from a friend of mine who's an actor who was in movies and stuff and was in that whole crew. And he told me that it was known that these guys that became big, like Brad Pitt and like, were having sex with dudes in the industry.
Well, you don't know if it was them, but there was definitely a male casting couch. I mean, there's definitely, if there was a female one, there was definitely a male one, you know.
So would you like would you have done that, like if you were in Hollywood?
Yes.
You would have.
I didn't even let you finish, but to be in a big movie, come on. Let's
like, if the guy was like, what would you do, just anything? Or
well, I,
That's what I'm wondering what they would make them do.
Well, are you talking about one night or just repeated?
I don't know. Like, there has to be truth to it, though. I've heard it so many times. Like, maybe it's not as bad as I'm thinking, but it there's something to that. You know what I mean? Like,
well, if you're like a struggling actor, you're poor, you can't pay your rent. You know, you're running out of time. Someone offers you a chance to be famous and rich.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. That's a tough call to make, you know? I mean,
I wonder if that happened. I wonder if Brad Pitt, like, you know, had sex with some dudes to get parts. And, like, he probably did, right?
I don't know. I mean, look, I know it's – he is talented, though, you know?
I bet you there's so many dudes who did that and just didn't get – and, like, I just totally got scammed.
Well, that would be –
that would be yeah. The only reason I
hate to blow like 10 dudes and find out it didn't mean anything.
I know that's like but I don't know, but anyway, I've just been kind of revisiting all these, like, you know, because I'm still kind of like stuck at home a lot, so I'm just kind of like trying to find anything to, and it's like I don't know if you have this. I'll watch something old because it's like nostalgic. Because I'll be like, "Oh, I remember when that, like, that summer, and I, like, things were easier at that point." You know what I mean?
You ever do the thing where you watch an old movie and you're like, and you're watching it again, you used to love the movie, and then you start thinking, "Do I love the movie because it reminds me of my youth, or is this movie really good?" Sometimes the movie really isn't good. And that's what it's sad when you find that out years later.
I've had that a lot where I rewatch a movie from when I was a kid, and then I rewatch and I'm like, oh my God. we talked about the movie Zapped. I was dying to see that movie, and, you know, and I remember, like, my friends talking about it, and, you know, and it's so funny, like, back in the day where, like, if there was, you know, if you were like 10 or 11 and there was like an R-rated movie, you just couldn't see it. You know what I mean? I mean, I used to do this thing in New York City where I wanted to see movies. And so what we had to do, and I mean, I swear to God, you probably had it. Like, I would try to see R-rated movies when I was like 11, and they just wouldn't let you in. Like, they were strict about it. They'd be like, no, you could, they're like, you can't see, you know, it's just some like I wanted to see, like, there was this movie called Teachers. Do you remember that? It was like with Ralph Macchio. It's literally just about like teachers in school, and it was rated R, and they like wouldn't let us see it. And it, looking back, it's like we're literally in New York City in the 80s, and I just want to go see a movie about school, and you guys won't let me. You know what I mean? It's just such an odd.
No, go ahead, sorry.
I was going to say, so we used to just go up to adults in line and be like, hey, can you pretend you're, like, with us?
Oh, that's smart.
We did that a lot. We did it for, like, Porky's and stuff like that, you know?
I just don't know. Do they enforce that now? Because it's like, I mean, you don't let a 12-year-old in to see a rated R movie. He can just say, okay, I'm just going to go home and watch porn on my fucking computer.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, too. Yeah. You can find it online. Yeah. I think kids aren't as into going to movies as they were, like, when like when we were young. Because we didn't really have anything else.
No. And, again, they're not. And the only movies they do want to see are, like, superhero movies, which they go out of their way to make them PG-13 just for that reason. Even the Deadpool
movie. Do you know what the first PG-13 movie was?
The Gremlins.
No, it was Red Dawn.
Oh, God.
I think it might have been because of Gremlins, though.
Yeah.
Like, they said Gremlins was too scary to be, like, a PG. That's kind of why they, like, parents started complaining. And then another one I was rewatching was Silent Night, Deadly Night. Do you remember that?
No.
No?
No, I mean, I've heard of it, but...
That's the Santa Claus horror movie.
Right.
Do you remember it came out in 84 and it was like really controversial because like parents moms were like picketing it because it was about Santa Claus murdering. So they were like, how can you disrespect Christmas? Now you're making kids.
I remember people getting upset about The Last Temptation of Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was a few years later.
But that was like, wasn't that just kind of like, wait, no, you mean The Passion of the Christ?
No, The Last Temptation. Yeah, that was the one in the 80s. What?
With Willem Dafoe?
Yeah. I mean, that, you know, was like kind of sacrilegious, they said, you know. I mean, I saw it once, it, you know.
Oh, it's with, yeah, Scorsese made it, right?
Right. A Scorsese Jesus movie. How did that not become a huge hit?
Well, you never really hear about it anymore. It did get a lot of flack, right. I remember. But that, I do remember Silent Night. So I was doing research on Silent Night, Deadly Night. You know, first of all, they made like 8 of them. They kept going straight to eventually started going straight to video.
really? So it was like the first one should have.
Yeah, the first one's like, it's kind of bad. But you know what, like, you know, it's one of those, I think like Tarantino and Robert Rodriguez love it or something.
Oh, of course. So it's got some
But yeah, cringe. You know what I mean? Like, Tarantino always loves these weird, like, movies that...
Was it supposed to be funny, like that Krampus? Did you see Krampus a few years ago?
Yeah, it was okay.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be like Gremlins-ish. Supposed to be kind of funny, but also a horror movie. Silent Night, Deadly Night is just a full-on horror movie. It's really cheesy, though, and it is kind of disturbing. I could see if you were young. And the thing I remember about it is that and Nightmare on Elm Street were coming out the same day.
Yeah, that was good.
And I remember being like I saw the ad for Nightmare on Elm Street and the one for Silent Night, Deadly Night, and I remember specifically being like, that Nightmare on Elm Street, that looks like shit. I was like, Silent Night, Deadly Night, that looks amazing. And Silent Night, Deadly Night opened really big, but then they took it out of a lot of theaters because of all the, like, you know, controversy. Do you remember this, too? This was the thing I remember young.
I don't know why I don't remember Silent Night, Deadly Night. It's weird. Go ahead.
There was a time where, and I guess it's where it was before NC-17, mm-hmm. where they would come out with movies, and they'd usually be, they were horror movies usually, and they wouldn't be rated R. They'd be like...
No rating?
I think it would be no rating, but it would be like no one under 18 can see the movie. Like with your parents.
Well, you know the original, like, so it was originally they would have X on stuff like that, right?
Yeah.
Like Midnight Cowboy, was rated X.
Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. So, and that was fine for a while, but then all of a sudden pornography started using X for their movies.
Yeah.
So an X started becoming a kiss of death, that right. if your movie was rated X, you're like porn. So they had to change it. But I think for a while between X and NC-17, there was like nothing.
Yeah. And I remember in college, I wrote a paper about the NC-17 rating because it had just come out. And like they just are using it in 91. And it was more for like artsy movies that were like adult theme movies.
Right.
Yeah, that they didn't want to give an X rip. But I remember there was a movie in the 80s called Maniac. Have you ever heard of that? It came out in 1980 or 81, mm-hmm. and it's like this horror movie, and it's so violent. And that was a movie that the ad said, it just said no one under 18 can see this.
Oh, that's interesting.
And
No, go ahead.
And I just remember, you know, and again, I was like so young. I think I was like 10 when that came out. I was just like, oh my God, what is this movie? You know, and it was like, so
you
no
still
one
wanted to
could
see it.
Though.
Yeah.
Well, like, and I mean, I think I was like scared to see it because like, I was like, no one under 18 can see this movie. And then I saw it years later. I think when I was like 30, it was on one night at like 2 a.m. I watched it. It's so like violent. It's like, it's really...
But that kind of stuff made people want to see it more, like young people.
Yeah, but I don't think that. I guess you probably could have seen it some. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like you somewhere. Sneak into the theater and you're like, hey, you tell your friends, guess what I saw? I remember shit like that going on. You know, and it's still. I guess it still goes on because when Deadpool came out, I know the first Deadpool was rated R, and they were like, yeah, this movie can't make money because only teen kids want to see this, and they can't go to a rated R movie. And then the movie made like all this money. So
yeah, it was like one of the biggest, wasn't it like one of the most successful superhero movies?
Yeah, like profitable. So obviously all these kids were sneaking into the movie, you know, or there was a bunch of 40-year-olds seeing the movie 20 times, which I don't think is the case.
So yeah, I think it's like there. I don't know how. I just remember as a kid. I remember as a kid trying to. When I was like 10, I would try to go see PG movies sometimes, and they wouldn't let us in. I remember that. Oh, you know you know the Gramercy Theater on 23rd that is now like they have concerts and stuff.
Oh yeah, that was a movie theater. Right?
That was a movie theater, and that was like known as the strictest one. Because they only had one theater.
So you gotta see the Muppet movie over and over again.
You know what I couldn't get in, they wouldn't let us me into was this movie with Chevy Chase, Oh Heavenly Dog.
Oh God.
Like I think that's PG. Benji's in it. And I think I was like 7, and I think I went to with my sister who's older, and they wouldn't let us in. I couldn't believe it.
Well, you caught a break on that one though.
I know. I mean, you know, at that time I probably would have loved it, but I don't know. I always think about that because New York was so dangerous at the time. It was so weird how like they wouldn't let us into movies, you know, like how, I never knew why anyone cared so much.
Yeah. You it's know, kind of funny how about Chevy Chase's career. Cause like, I think for New Jersey, he was just making such garbage after he left Saturday Night Live.
This was like 1980 maybe. So yeah. I think it was like he had done, they were trying to make him like a movie. I mean, he was a movie star for a while, but I think like the first few he made didn't like Foul Play, I think was one of his first ones with Goldie Hawn.
Right.
And then Oh Heavenly Dog. And then he made like,
well, he was in Caddyshack, but he wasn't really the star of Caddyshack. So
I just rewatched that too.
Yeah.
Have you seen that recently?
Yeah. Like a year ago.
It's not that funny.
I mean, when you see the whole thing about how the making of that movie and or what was that one thing about it? It came out at the same time as Airplane.
Oh, and, yeah, yeah.
And Airplane is just a funnier movie, you know?
Yeah.
I think Caddyshack, there was a lot of, you know, improv in that movie that made it funny, but it's not as good as Airplane.
But I feel like it came, but when I was young, I feel like it was known as a classic pretty fast.
Right.
Like by the time I was like, by the time 1982 rolled around, everyone was like Caddyshack. And then again, I finally saw it like on TV and I was like, I mean, it's not like terrible, but it's just not, I also think it's just movies are just different. So
yeah, it kind of still hold. People still watch it because it's a sports movie. So they'll throw it on a lot of these sports networks when they have no programming. Probably they did it in the last few months because it's technically a sports movie. And as sports movies goes, it's probably up there as one of the best. But that's a low bar.
Yeah, and it's also like all those guys at the time were like so huge. It was like, you know, Bill Murray, Chevy Chase, Rodney Dangerfield's probably the funniest part of the movie.
Yeah.
That's what's like interesting about it too. Like Chevy Chase is okay in it, but he's not like one of the funnier parts of the movie.
I saw this Bill Murray movie recently. What About Bob?
Yeah, I've never seen that whole thing.
You know, it's so funny because it was directed by Frank Oz, who, you know, he was Fozzie and Yoda and stuff. But he was actually a really good comedy director. He directed, these are the movies, he directed Little Shop of Horrors, which is not bad.
Yeah.
What About Bob? Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Yeah, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Bowfinger, which I think is a great movie.
Yeah, my friend from high school is in that movie.
Oh, was he? Who?
Yeah, he has kind of a small part. You know, you remember how because the whole thing is that they don't have any money, so they like they go to like the border and just capture like four Mexicans.
He's one of those.
He's one of them, and they make them the crew. Yeah, I went to that guy's wedding, and Frank Oz was at the wedding. And Frank, they did this, you know, weird ceremony, like where they did the vows and stuff around like a tree in a circle. And they had like four different people do deliver the, what do they call them when they like marry them? They had like four different people do it. And Frank Oz was one of the people.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Isn't that weird?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, also he directed In-N-Out. I don't know if you ever saw that one.
No, I heard that was good.
It was
Frank
good.
Oz directed that?
Yeah, and also the original Death at a Funeral.
Oh, really?
Which I saw in the movie theater, and I remember dying when I saw that in the movie theater. It was Peter Dinklage's one of his first big roles.
Oh, really? And he's in Blues Brothers.
Blues Brothers, yeah. But as a director, I mean, you know how we sometimes talk about like these mainstream comedies where there's just not a lot of them anymore?
Yeah.
He's good at directing those type of movies. You know, the kind of movies where everyone could kind of think is pretty funny.
Yeah, I think he kind of doesn't get a lot of people kind of like underrate him as a director, comedy director. But yeah, Dirty Round Scoundrels is a classic.
So funny.
And Bowfinger's pretty good, and you know,
I feel like that movie's so underrated, Bowfinger.
Yeah, it's pretty. I should rewatch it. I think it's funny.
Like, yeah, it's like Eddie Murphy to me, his best performance.
Really? Yeah. Wow.
Not his best movie, his best performance.
I actually went to the set of that movie.
You did?
Isn't that cool? Yeah, because I went to LA and my friend was doing it. And I remember he was like, hey, yeah, I had just flown in. He's like, hey, yeah, come right to the set because I'm going to be there. And I was like, all right. And I showed up to the set, and you know, there's like these tables, I guess, where people were eating, and like, there was this guy sitting there who just looked exactly like Eddie Murphy. And I was like standing right near him. And I was like, wow, that's Eddie Murphy. And then I looked and it wasn't Eddie. It was just like his stand in, I guess. But Steve Martin was there. And it was really trippy because it was like, I just kind of like flown in and all of a sudden I'm like on the set of this movie, like Steve Martin standing there and like.
Yeah. He wrote Frank the movie. Oz.
Yeah, Steve Martin wrote it, yeah.
But you see Eddie Murphy in that movie. You know how he would be in those movies where he would play like five different people? And he's usually four of them are in a fat suit.
Yeah.
You know? But in this movie, he didn't do that. It was just him and his...
Yeah, he just played the two guys.
Yeah, and they were just... It was... You know, I just feel like that was his most underrated performance.
That's funny. I feel like no one really talks about that movie. Kind of like came. I think it did okay, but it didn't really like.
It didn't destroy. It did okay, but it's very inside. I think that's the problem that people had with it. But it is a funny, you know.
Have you been watching anything else? That's what stood out to me is like. Well, it's really funny too because now whenever like I'll perform at Dangerfields, it's always really weird being there because there's all these pictures of the Caddyshack people, and there's pictures of them at Dangerfields from like the Caddyshack like premiere party and stuff. Oh, wow. And I know, it's just so weird because like, you know, that was such an iconic movie growing up, and you know, now to be there, it's just kind of like, wow, oh, this like all this was happening,
right?
You know, and I kind of grew up near Dangerfield, and to think like when we were worshiping those guys, they were just kind of down the street. So like weird to me. There's a lot of like history. I feel like people shit on that club, but I like that club. There's a lot of like history.
Oh,
there.
Totally. I think it was in the Joker movie and that kind of.
Yeah, with that too. Yeah. So have you been doing any? You haven't done any live comedy, right?
No, I'm doing one, I think, this weekend.
Outside?
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Who knows?
Where is it? Can you say?
In Jersey. No, it's just someplace. I don't even know. Like, it's in a parking lot. That's where you do comedy now.
What do you think? So what do you think? What's going to happen from here now with stand-up?
I just don't think. I think we're looking at 2021 for clubs.
Do you think it'll just go back to how it was? It seems like it can't.
I think they'll open, but I honestly think that they're not going to really. And the ones around the country, I guess some of them are opening, but some of them are going to close again. I think that's already happened, right? And like,
yeah. This is another thing I just remember. So Carl Reiner died like a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was a pretty big, I mean, you know.
Yeah, he was hilarious. I mean,
he's another one that made those, like, a lot of those classics.
Did you ever see the 2,000-year-old man thing?
No, I mean, I know about it, but I've never watched. Is it funny? It is. Him and Mel Brooks?
Because they're kind of like, I guess they're ad-libbing a lot, you know, and it's just, Carl Reiner was a great straight man. He was good at setting people up, even though he was funny on his own.
Yeah.
And you could just see, you know, like, he's setting these jokes up because he knows what's going to make Mel Brooks be really funny.
And that's like what kind of broke them, right?
Not, I mean, yeah, I think they both worked on the Sid Caesar show back in the 50s, which, you know, that's always like that Sid Caesar show where the writing staff is like insane.
Is it like with Steve Martin on that?
No, it was just 1950s, so it was like the writing staff was like Carl Reiner, Mel Brooks, Neil Simon.
Jesus, really?
At one point, Woody Allen.
Oh my God.
This other guy, Mel Tolkien, which he basically created all the family. He was like
the
main guy, not Norman Lee, but and I think it was Neil Simon's brother. There was like a few others, but you read the list and you're like, oh my God. Like some of the biggest people ever in Hollywood or comedy people.
And then I guess they say that 2,000-year-old man kind of like jump started his writing career, and then I think
it got him on TV more. I think, yeah.
And then, like, I think back then there was, you know, when there were less movies, and so it was, I don't know, in that comedy scene, it was a lot smaller. Mm-hmm. And I think if you were in that scene, you know, as a writer or something, you could just. They would like gamble on you to make a movie.
Yeah.
Like I got this feeling that like when they were for comedy movies, a lot of the studios and people were kind of like, okay, you guys seem like you're like really funny and know what comedy is. So you guys should just make, I saw an interview with Harold Ramis and I forgot who someone was like, yeah, you should, because he was a writer and I think he was performing stuff, but someone was like, yeah, you look like you should be a director. Like, direct a movie. Like, so then they were like, you should direct Caddyshack.
Right.
So he kind of got it just because, I mean, I'm sure there's more to it, but it was just, he was sort of in that world and they were kind of like, yeah, you look like you would know how to like direct a comedy.
Well, especially because the confidence, like imagine back in the day if Mel Brooks, if you're like a studio guy, and Mel Brooks comes in to pitch a movie, he probably does it in such a great way. Yeah, you could see he would sell that shit, you know?
Oh, yeah, he seems like he would have been a very, yeah, he was very, or he's still, I mean, I don't know, he's like 98, right?
Yeah, I think they were best friends. That kind of, it's sad, you know?
But do you, so, because, you know, Molly, our friend Molly Heckerling, who, you know, she was telling us, Harold Ramis was her dad, she was telling me that there was some story about when he was first directing Caddyshack that he didn't even know, like, how to, like, where to point the camera. Do you remember that?
I remember that.
She told some story about that, like that he just was so green as a director. Like someone was like, no, you can't aim it here. It has, because he was aiming it where there were like the crew was in the shot or something.
That's funny.
I just feel like now they wouldn't give you, they just give you like no chances. You know what I mean? And I know it's different. It's more like the idea of, you know, that they would just let someone direct a huge comedy movie. I just feel like they don't give a lot of people the shot. You know, they're not going to give like a comedian writer, you know, who hasn't like completely developed the thing themselves.
Right.
They're not just going to hand it. It's like if you're going to do that, you have to like completely.
But on the opposite end, you could just do it yourself and you can finance it through a Kickstarter. I mean, it's like, it's been done, you know?
Right. Like, it's just hard to like break through.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's hard to break through like the studio thing, but I think it's much easier to do things on your own now.
Yeah, I think you can do it on your own, but I think it's hard to get the audience. Like, a lot of times people make things and there's so many things being made, it's hard for it to like latch on. I don't know, it's just funny because, like, you know, I know when I was younger, I watched these older things and I'm like, man, I wish like this, I would want to do this and that, but then I'm like, we live in a totally different world now. Right. It's not like that. You know what I mean? And you got to think, you know, like a lot of the people like our age, even a little younger who are in comedy, probably really successful, are in it because of all those movies and all those people. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, around our age, I guess.
Yeah. But I think if sometimes young people don't even think about like the barriers, because there's less, certain ways there's less barriers because you could just make.
In comedy, you mean?
Well, you could just, you know, you see comics a year in, they're big on TikTok or Instagram. And
yeah, that's true.
So, I mean, I think sometimes that works against us a little bit because, you know, back in the day, there was like so many barriers. And I don't know. I mean, there are certain ways, but I feel like a lot of people just do this shit on their own. It's like,
no, crazy. That's true. There's definitely, you can work outside of that system now. Yeah. It's kind of like becoming less and less
right.
Important to deal with them. So yeah. And have you been watching anything else? You've been watching. I also was rewatching Richard Pryor's Live on the Sunset Strip.
Oh yeah. That's good.
Yeah, again, that was another one that I was rewatching. I remember as a kid, I was like, oh, yeah, because I don't think I even understood it, really, but it just seemed cool to like it. But, you know, and it's sacrilege. I mean, obviously, Richard Pryor is, like, you know, great and stuff, but I was kind of like, man, this doesn't really, like, it just didn't really resonate with me at all.
Oh,
like,
really?
Like, you know, he's good, but it's so different. It's like, I would say I saw some video where they were talking about how Dave Chappelle surpassed Richard Pryor, and a lot of them were like, no way, Richard Pryor. And I would say, like, hands down, Chappelle is funnier than Richard Pryor.
Well, especially comedy dates kind of easily. So it's hard to watch some stand-up from 40 years ago and say that's hilarious. It's just hard, you know?
Even though I've rewatched, like, Eddie Murphy's, like, Raw, and I still think it's really funny.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I guess, how well that holds up. It does hold up pretty well.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess it's, but even some stuff with Eddie Murphy, you're like, this seems hack. But because everyone's like has copied, I don't know. It's just like the older I get, the more I see how hard comedy is. The old, like younger, I was like, oh yeah, comedy. You know, I know everything about comedy. Now I'm just like, oh wait, comedy's really hard.
About to get much harder too. It's gonna. Get
I know.
So hard,
I know. It's just. It's also hard because what's really hard too is like you can be the greatest comedian, be the funniest thing of the time, and then like when things change, you know, tastes change so much and comedy changes so much, you know.
Well, think
I mean?
About how comedy was kind of getting difficult to do before the pandemic, you know. Audiences were getting more sensitive,
yeah,
you know, people groaning a lot of jokes. Think about what's going to happen when it comes back after the pandemic and the whole, you know, racial unleashed. It's gonna. People are gonna. I can't even imagine how sensitive these audiences are gonna be.
You think so? You don't think it would like the opposite effect?
No.
Probably.
I don't. What was that? Oh, that was fireworks.
I don't know. I wonder if like stand-up will just become a. I mean, it'll still exist, but I don't know. It definitely seems like there's gonna be some kind of shift. I don't know what it's gonna be, but you know what I mean. It's when you look at it and 15 years, what's stand-up going to be now? You know what I mean? Like,
it's just going to be one of those things where it's like you can talk about everything, but you know, certain subjects, if you talk about it a little bit, it's just going to be difficult to get through, you know?
Yeah.
Unless you have like this fan base or is coming
to see.
Do you
miss doing it? You must, right?
I do, but I'm a little worried about that whole thing. Just judging from what I've seen doing virtual shows, I think audiences are getting more sensitive, and I think it's
really gonna, even on the virtual shows.
Yeah, because I think it's even less like it's more based on what you're talking about because it's not performance driven. So they're really kind of listening to what you're saying as much as you know what you're doing up there. But yeah. I could be wrong. I just feel like it's going to get tough. Maybe.
What's going on? Is that all right outside your house?
Can we edit this out? I guess not.
Probably. No. Is it just fireworks or is like...
Yeah, fireworks or zombie
like
apocalypse.
I even think with the whole like Louis C.K. kind of, you know, obviously there was like the controversy. Jesus. the controversy. But and now he came out with a special and it seemed... And I was saying this before. I don't know where I was saying it. That like it seems like what's happened with him is like the worst thing that probably could have happened but first of all, I mean, he's like a millionaire and he made so much money off that, but you can kind of tell like people when it came out were like, all right, he's back. Yeah, it's so great. And then like literally a week later, no one was talking about it. And I feel like that's the thing with him now. Cause remember the days when it was like everything he did was like, did you see that special? Oh my God. Yeah, he has a new thing coming out. And now it's just very like, I don't even think anyone's really mad at him anymore. I think people are just kind of like, yeah, whatever. Like it feels very like things are moving beyond. He's clearly not going to. And I think it really hurt him that Pete Davidson like shit on him so hard. Cause I feel like Pete Davidson's such like an icon in comedy now
yeah.
that it would, I think a lot of people, especially younger people, are like, yeah, screw that guy. You know what I mean? I think that hurt him, Pete Davidson, like, hating him.
Yeah, I think because at the time, Louis C.K. was so big, and he was probably like, who the fuck is this guy? You know? He doesn't realize how quickly things can change, you know?
That's
Louis C.K. back then must have felt so invincible. Like,
invincible, and this kid was, like, 19. It was like, what was he going to do? You know, he wasn't going to, like, and, But again, it's kind of interesting because it shows like no one is immune to it, no matter what. Like you can be the biggest person in the world. I mean, it's happened with like Chris D'Elia. I mean, Chris D'Elia was another one who was like invincible. And he's rich and I'm sure he'll be fine. But I mean, I don't think there's really coming back hard for him on this. Just because I feel like, again, I think the worst thing that can happen is that people just don't care anymore. Like, or like, yeah, that guy, whatever.
Especially since, like, I know a lot of people in the comedy community didn't like Louis C.K. that much. And a lot of people didn't like D'Elia. So when you fall, people are, one has your back, you know?
And Chris D'Elia didn't really have the, like, comedy reputation to help him.
You know? Yeah. And I think all these guys who were like supposed to be in his crew, D'Elia's crew,
they just laugh.
Like they were supposed to be all best friends. All of a sudden, none of them are backing him up.
Yeah, some of them kind of are, but
they are.
I watched some podcasts and they were like crying. One guy was crying about it, which I was just like, I don't know. I guess because it's his friend and he doesn't want to see his friend, but I don't know. It just shows you, like, no matter what, like, there's going to be a time where you're just probably not funny anymore, you know, or to whoever is out there for the most part, you know, like, I mean, it was kind of what happened when I was watching Richard Pryor. I didn't think he wasn't good. I just was like, wow, this is really different. Like, this isn't.
Just the comedy just dates, you know, at the time it was probably very, you know.
Yeah, and I think he was also like the guy of the time. He was the first to kind of, he was great, especially for the time.
Isn't that when he talks about, you know, lighting himself on fire and stuff?
Yeah, there was that too.
His drug problems.
He clearly was like really, he had like a lot of problems, that guy.
I think
like,
that was the big deal in that special is and comics weren't really doing that. They weren't getting that personal with their issues.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. It was before everyone did that.
Okay. Now, if you don't do it, people get mad at you. You're like, you can't, what? You didn't get raped as a child? Why are you up here, you know?
Yeah, and it's kind of like he talked about it so candidly, and then, you know, Louis C.K. with his thing barely talked about. His was different, I guess, because his was like people were mad, but Richard Pryor, I think people were also kind of, not mad, but it definitely hurt his reputation that he was like a cocaine addict or whatever. Yeah. Even though I do think that was like a suicide thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
He made a movie. Do you remember he made a movie that was kind of about him?
Yeah, Jojo Rabbit, was it?
Jojo Dancer, Your Life is Calling. And in that,
wasn't
he
Jojo
wrote
Rabbit?
In that movie, he wrote and directed it. It's the fire thing is a suicide thing.
Yeah.
So he's all but telling you.
You want that.
Yeah. No, it's that's an interesting. You should. I don't know if you've ever watched it, but watching it now is kind of because it's like a serious movie that.
Yeah.
And it was when he was like a comedy icon.
Probably why it didn't do well because people were probably expecting.
Yeah, that's what it is, and it's very dark, and but it's good because it's like he's really like you're right. Like no one really he was the best at like doing that. That's what was one thing that was great about him is he would kind of like lay it all out there. He was very real and raw and like, you know, he just said he was really filthy and obviously he was like, you know, one of the best of all time.
I have we probably have to wrap up soon, but I have one more thing I want to bring up. Is that cool?
No. Yeah. What?
It's just something, it's a little off topic, but it was a story that I read today. It's driving me fucking insane.
Okay.
I think you'll be interested. All right, you ever hear of the Ayn Rand Institute?
No, I know who Ayn Rand is. That right. The one who the Fountainhead.
Right, the one, the big libertarian, like, I don't want anything from the government kind of bullshit, right?
Yeah, Atlas Shrugged. And
right. And anyway, it's the Institute that's all about libertarianism. Like, hey, fuck the government. The government, you don't need the government. The government shouldn't give you any money, blah, blah, blah. Guess who got a government loan during COVID?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. It's so.
The Institute? Was she like supposed to be like kind of a phony or something?
Yeah. In fact, I read recently that she actually was on Social Security and Medicare at the end of her life.
Oh, really? Did you ever read The Fountainhead?
I read like parts of it, but it was all about like be self-reliant.
It was do it your own way and yeah. Like don't succumb to anyone else's vision and don't let them stop. Rourke? Is that the name of the character?
Yeah. Well,
Howard Rourke or something?
Yeah. But her whole thing was she did a couple of these books. It was all about the modern libertarian movement is about her. It's like, oh... And they use that in a way, so like, hey, like, can I get some health insurance? Like, no, you shouldn't have health insurance. You should never ask the government for anything. And then in the end, they always fucking take money.
Yeah, I don't know. I know that's like a big issue. And I feel like they've conned people into thinking that getting things from the government is like this awful thing. I don't understand.
The reason is because I know so many like people who like claim to be libertarians. You know, young people.
What is that exactly?
It means that you don't want, you think government should be hands off, you know, but it's not for everything. It's just the things that you think the government should be hands off.
For. Why is it because they're afraid of becoming like China or something? Is that what it is?
No, it's just like they want to, it's just rich people use that to like brainwash everybody because they're like, no, you shouldn't ask for anything because you shouldn't get anything.
Should just be able to like make your, you know, this is the greatest country because anyone can make themselves into anything.
Right.
That's you know, and to bring back.
Most of these rich guys just inherit their money, you know?
That's what I mean. So it's very like, that's why I really like Shameless because it's very much like focusing on that part of the population who like isn't given anything. And they're kind of like, the American dream. Just make your, make your way, become a billionaire. Anyone can become a billionaire. But, what I really like about it too is how they're always like they're real like hustlers where they're always coming up with some new way to like make like it's funny like because it's so like the opposite of my life like there's a part there's one where like one of the kids gets married to some girl and the girl's like 15 and he's like 17 and like and at breakfast they're like, oh, you married her? They're like, oh God.
Yeah.
That's like it. No one's like, they're just like, oh God, why did you do that? You know, and then they go on with their day. It's just kind of like, they're just kind of annoyed that their 17-year-old. And then there's like an episode where like, she's so annoying and someone like just kills her. Mm. And I guarantee you that kind of shit, just, you know, bats an eye. But it's almost like in that world, if you're struggling so hard, that you those are solutions you have to like come up with. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, the guy who was like one of the founders of this group, Grover Norquist. You ever hear of him?
What's his name?
Grover Norquist. His name is Grover. So you know, he's on Bill Maher sometimes. He's just like anti-government anything, and he was like saying how this unemployment insurance was bad for this recent. You know, for the stimulus.
Why though? Because it's government just giving you money. Right.
It's bad because it's not him getting the money. Don't you understand? It's poor people getting the money.
So they just don't want poor people to have any money. Is that what it is?
That's the whole thing. So because they know
that's an interesting philosophy.
Because what changes? You know, there's such wealth inequity in this country. What's the only thing that stops that is by giving just directly giving poor people money.
Yeah.
So if you don't,
is it just they just want poor people to just die off? Is that
no? They just don't want people to, you know, to rise up and they want a caste system in this country.
Yeah,
you know, and if you're,
I guess that's what it is. But we already kind of we have it pretty much.
Yeah, but it's been made worse in the last 30 or 40 years, you know, because they've destroyed unions, they've hollowed out the middle class, you know, and you know you always hear these stories about like. Mitt Romney or Trump, they're like, oh yeah, you know, I'm a self-made man. Well, originally I got a loan from my dad, you know, $4 million. It's always that story, you know?
Yeah, George Dell. Yeah, like those are the guy. Yeah, and it's like those are the guys that like with all the power, the ones that are like W. That he was kind of like a failure for years, right? And then, right. And he finally like I guess he bought a baseball team and finally had some.
Yeah, he got money, but he traded off his. But you think he made his money on it?
No, I know, but I mean, even he was like, he was with all the money and chances, he like failed over and over.
Yeah.
But that's true. It's kind of like if you're poor, you get like you don't get a lot of chances to fail.
You get like you have to be, and that's even you have to be more safe with your choices because you're like, if I fail, let's say you have a family, you're like, I can't. No one's gonna bail me out. That's it.
Yeah, and I do, and I think, you know, people get caught up. I think young, what happens to people is, especially if they're poor, they what kind of does them in and keeps them down is like having kids.
Yeah.
Like they have no thought of like control. Like they'll just have like people have like, you know, I remember seeing this a lot on the street. I would see like, you know, like a homeless family, you know. Yeah. You know, and they'd have like three or four kids, you know, and they went, and I'm like, dude, what, like, why do you have three kids? Like, I'm sure you were already homeless with like one or two kids.
But you don't know. I mean, people might fall. I mean, again, it's like, you don't take chances. You can't take chances at that point. It's like, you can't have like two kids and say, I'm going to invent TikTok. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
You got to work at your 9-to-5 job that you'll probably get laid off from, you know?
I feel like you can't have kids anymore if you want to like move up.
They don't make it like this. They always say pro family in this country. They do nothing to encourage you having kids.
I mean, yeah, I think, you know, I have friends who like have kids and they're like, and then, you know, you go through a divorce and then they have to pay all this money and it
forget about that. To have the kid, it usually, I know someone, they tell me they had a kid, it cost $10,000 in the hospital.
Jesus.
I'm like, why are we charging people to reproduce?
I don't know how. I don't know how people, I mean, I think people now are having less kids than most people.
Right.
But I mean, I feel like when, you know, when like our parents' generation, it was like normal to have like five kids.
Well, yeah. Also to keep the society going, everyone has to have like more than one kid. You have to have like 2.1 kids. And we're not up to that anymore. You know, the only people who are immigrants who come here.
I like now that I'm older and I understand, you know, like making money and having a job, how hard it is. Like, I wonder how, like, I almost guarantee you, like when I came along, like my parents were kind of like bummed out, like, cause I was the third kid.
Yeah.
They're probably just like, oh no,
it's over.
Not another one. it's just funny to think that like you're probably a burden.
You see like some of these people with kids, it's like, you'll see people on the subway with like three kids and they're like making a go of it. And you're like, how the hell? And you kind of look at them, maybe you just misjudge them, but you see like, hey, that person can't have such a great job. How are they fucking doing this?
I have no idea. I'm always blown away.
And you can't say welfare because you know what? Welfare does not give you that much. It just doesn't.
They must just, I don't know, maybe, I feel like what you got to do is like just marry someone and get divorced, you know, and be a woman. I mean, I feel like that's like your best chance.
I don't even think that's a thing because it's like people, men, it's not like all men are making money now and a lot of men won't pay.
No, I know. But I mean, that's what I mean. Get, you find some, I remember like, I was thinking about this the other when I started law school, like, I was in school with like these 23-year-olds and they were all like, a lot of them were like engaged, you know? And I was like, what are you doing? You're engaged. You just started law school in New York City and like, yeah. You've already like, I don't know. I just, if I was like, you know, I was single in law school, I still am. But if I was 22, 23, I feel like when you're 22, 23, you don't know yourself really. And your hormones are so raging that that's like when it's kind of like getting a tattoo. Like a lot of people get tattoos when they're like so young
right. And
don't know anything yet. And they're just making those choices. I feel like that's when people end up when they get married and have kids is when they're like so young and they're just like, yeah, this is a good idea. Yeah. And then they're like, oh fuck.
But that's not the path. I mean, like you can get married young and have kids and you could still get divorced. And the guy, that's the other thing, because like I've been on a lot of these groups recently, and they're talking about unemployment, and all these people, all these men are chiming in saying, can they garnish your child support payments? Like, apparently, I think there's just a lot of dudes out there who aren't paying their child support,
Yeah, there is a lot of that.
Yeah, which makes sense. You know, look, if you don't have the money, you don't have the money. You can't just say, I'm going to, like, imagine if you had to pay child support. Like, you have to come up with that money every month. It's like, yeah. Goodfellas, fuck you, pay me, you know?
Yeah, it's like...
So when someone gets married at 22, that's not means ever it's going to be happily ever after.
Sometimes I wonder, you know, like I, you know, like Eminem had such a, you know, his dad left him when he was like a baby, basically him and his mom. Yeah. And, you know, he like hated his mom. Like, you know, they were really poor. And then when he became big, you know, he was always rapping about his dad, like hate, like he clearly has a lot of unresolved anger at that guy. And, his dad like died recently. And, I was wondering what's so, it's kind of like almost an experiment. Like I wonder if Eminem's dad had stayed with him and been a good dad, I don't think there would have been an Eminem. Do you know what I mean?
He'd be like Eminem, the ophthalmologist, you know?
Yeah. You know, it's just such a weird, like it's almost, I guarantee he wouldn't have been motivated to do that. You know what I mean?
But for every Eminem story about someone being motivated because their dad left, there's like 99 stories where the dad left and the fucking kid is just fucked
That's
up.
That's what I mean. Yeah. And clearly he got really lucky, but yeah. It's such like an amazing, when you think about things like that, where who knows what would have happened. Like I like the fact that he was so angry and never, and had that horrible childhood, you know, was something that like made him decide, like, I'll go through anything to like show this guy to like become successful. Like I'll do, you know, and like even to the point of like, I would like, you know, what he was probably like, I'll sleep with some dude, you know, seriously, like, well, that's when it comes back to that. Like, like, you don't, you know, it's easy to be like, well, cause I mean, he again is one of those people, he was, like the people like on Shameless, he was one of those people like no opportunity.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's like the American thing. We ignore everyone until they do something good, and then all we like lift them up. Like, mm-hmm. You're like Jay-Z is his hero, but I mean Jay-Z made his whole career, like he was able to fund his career on like selling crack and breaking the law. And it's like, but now it's like, oh well, that's cool as long as you like made it.
But was he gonna? What was Jay-Z? He was in the inner city. Well, who's he gonna do? Get a job at Google? You know,
that's what I mean. Though it's such like you know, they don't want to give you any chances. And then like he was like, well, fuck it, I'm gonna do what I have to do. And then but that's not what you're taught to do. You know, you're taught like you can't. You have to play by the rules. And he was like, I'm not playing by the rules. Like, fuck this.
Yeah, so. And you probably, someone's smart. Like some people who sell crack, they're like, I'm gonna sell crack until I get killed. But he was probably like, I'm gonna sell crack until I make enough money to get out of this.
Yeah, I mean, he was obviously smart about like he had like somebody he was funding, but it's just I don't know. I think of someone. Someone wrote a book a few years ago, and they. One of the chapters was about how Jay-Z is held up as this like huge hero to the society, but it's kind of like at the same time we tell kids like don't play by the rules and don't ever cheat, and it's basically this is a guy who like cheated as well. I mean, because he kind of had to.
Yeah,
I don't know. It's just like, you know, you look at the things that kids are taught young, and it's just no one plays by, you know, all the adults in charge aren't playing by those rules.
No, and the smart kids learn early that, you know, you got to bend the rules a little bit.
Yeah,
you know?
I feel like I
look at Mark Zuckerberg. You think that guy played by the rules, you know?
Yeah, and that's a good example of like he didn't really. I don't know. It's iffy what he clearly did shady shit, you know, but yeah, it's almost like you have to, I don't know.
I mean, like, he wasn't like flat out illegal, but he fucked everyone over.
No. Yeah. He definitely had to do like shit, like shady shit. Yeah. And I think that it's just amazing. You never hear that side of those stories. It's always like the American, you know, the American ultimate, whatever it is always just like the result. Like, well, if you get here, then it doesn't really matter how you got there. You just better get there. If you don't,
there's only to me one group, maybe one of the few groups that really makes it on merit. It's like athletes. because you can't fake that. You can't blow anyone to get on the Yankees.
Right. You know? Like, what's her face? Lori Loughlin's kid. Like, she was a really good rower. No, I know. Yeah.
To make millions of dollars, you can't fake that. You know, even acting. Yeah. Even acting, like, you don't have to be a great actor to be a movie star, you know, but to be a great quarterback at the NFL, you have to be a great quarterback.
Yeah. And I think comedy used to be more like that, but I think it became less like a meritocracy.
Yeah. You could fake it too.
Yeah. It became, but it, I think like, that's kind of what I liked about when I started. It was like, oh, well, if you're good, then that's kind of all that matters. But yeah. Then it became like, that's actually not really true.
No, I mean,
you still need breaks and stuff. And
yeah, and you can just learn it by just watching other comedians and basically stealing.
Yeah, you can just steal. There's people who do that. A lot of people, yeah. It's more, I actually remember when I did my movie, I interviewed Jim Gaffigan for it, and he said that. He said that it's, you know, comedy's not a meritocracy. He's like, it's more so than most things, but it's still not a meritocracy.
No.
And even he's saying that. He's like someone that's reached the height of it. All right. So how long have we been going?
Yeah, this is for a while, so we'll wrap it up.
All right. Cool. Well,
it was a good episode.
This was good. So we'll be back. We'll be back next week with an episode.
Yeah. We have a good big guest coming up.
We do. We have a really big guest coming
up.
Keanu Reeves. Yeah. So we'll see you next time. Thanks a lot.
All right. If you heckle me, I give your ass a shine. Then diss you with a dope ass one line. On the microphone, I kill at will. I make laughter spill because I'm ill for real. Jail, my jokes are sick like Lyme disease from a tick. And at every show, I bang the hottest chick. I'm getting more ass than Brad fucking Pitt. I'm a comedy legend like that movie Vacation.